Hello, and welcome to the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I'm Carl from selfsufficienthub.com, and I'm here to talk about all things self-sufficiency, all things homesteading, and about how we can reduce the gap between our consumption and our production. Sustainability and food security matters. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 368 of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I hope you're all safe and well. Today, I am replaying an episode from February 2021, and this is my conversation with Anna De La Vega from The Urban Worm. Now, this is all about vermicomposting, all about worms and using worms in your garden. So please do enjoy it. I thought that it was apt, as we have recently just dipped our toes into the vermicomposting world, and I felt that a refresher on this episode would be helpful for me, so maybe you will get the same benefit. Anyway, I'm going to hand you over to my conversation now with Anna De La Vega. So welcome to the show, everyone, and today I have with me a special guest, Anna De La Vega from The Urban Worm. Am I pronouncing your name correctly there, Anna?
Yep, that's correct.
So can you start just by introducing yourself and tell us a little bit about what it is you do at The Urban Worm, what it is and how you got into it?
Okay. Oh, it's a lot. So where do we start? Okay, so basically, The Urban Worm is a social enterprise, a registered CIC, and we provide vermicomposting education for schools, institutions, businesses, community groups. And we produce vermicompost for retail, and also we make affordable upcycled worm farms from reclaimed materials. So it's just about affordability, really, and making worm farming, otherwise known as vermicomposting, with the vermi coming from the Latin for worm, accessible to people and affordable.
Fantastic.
For solutions for regenerative organic waste management and organic agriculture. So we don't need synthetic chemicals. We can make our own.
Fantastic. Yeah, absolutely right. So I wonder, what's your sort of background, Anna? How did you find yourself running The Urban Worm?
Right. Well, so where do we start? So I started off in photojournalism, actually. I had naive ideas about trying to save the world with revealing all the truth with, you know, these fresh and naive. But actually, I had an internship with the Kathmandu Post shortly after I graduated. And wow. I left the Kathmandu Post because I just felt like I wasn't learning anything. And I was being sent out on jobs, photographing car showrooms and all these things. But anyway, I left and went to work with an organisation called Practical Action that was founded by Ernest Fritz Schumacher. And he wrote a very influential book, as known as the father of the green movement, really, called Small is Beautiful, Economics as if People Mattered.
Right.
And at the time, it was advocating for low-tech technology. He calls it appropriate technology, technology that people can control.
Yeah.
When we were moving towards, you know, big tech and oil. So during that time, I travelled the western region of Nepal with Practical Action, documenting photographing their projects. And then when I came back to the UK, I actually wanted to work in sustainable development in some way and change career. So I came back and did a master's in human security and environmental change. My eyes were open to the corruption and fragility of our food system. So as soon as I graduated afterwards, I set up The Urban Worm. The economy had crashed as well. There was no work. So I tried to make my own way. And luckily, I've been very supported with grants there over the years. So that was seven years ago now.
Wow.
And we're still here. So that's a good sign.
Yeah, fantastic. You mentioned in your master's degree that you had your eyes opened to the corruption and fragility of our food system. Can you elaborate a little on that?
Where do we start? How long have we got? I guess. GM, the impact of GM on communities and livelihoods, destroying the land, bankrupting farmers through their addiction to synthetic agrochemicals.
Yeah.
So this to me was something that didn't really sit right. So okay, well, how do we do something different? What is
can I just stop you and interject there for a second? Because I know this is a tangent that I certainly didn't expect to be discussing with you, and I'm sorry if I sideswiped you a little. With regards to the dependency nature with which commercial farming has been sort of ushered towards, with the dependency on fertilizers and things like that, and how that's actually more expensive than just growing polycultures and et cetera, et cetera. I am 100% with you. I'm following 100%. But when it comes to the whole GM thing, now my personal stance, and it's not one that's based on a master's degree, I haven't done, you know, a tremendous amount of research on it, but my personal feeling is that GM in principle, genetically modified crops in principle, don't necessarily meat, you know, they aren't necessarily the big baddies that they're made out to be, because a lot of our crops, even ones that we grow in our gardens, might be genetically modified for certain, just for growing traits. They don't have to be genetically modified to tolerate glyphosate or things like that. So,
well, this is the issue. So 80% of research in GM is towards going to make them resistant to glyphosate.
Sure.
So this is the main issue, really.
Sure.
And it destroys communities. You know, when we have food that doesn't produce seed, that's very dangerous territory to be in.
Yeah, yeah.
And when these seeds cross contaminate, or this fruit cross contaminates, it's very dangerous, and there are many issues surrounding this topic.
I'm perfectly prepared to be put right, and I'm certainly not trying to say that, you know, I've done as much.
And ownership, being able to save your seeds. If we can't save our seeds, we don't have a regenerative agricultural future. We have to have ownership of our own seeds. And for a company to say, no, that belongs to me. Like in America, for example, they... farmers, if a GM seed is blows onto their land, they have spies that come round and check. Then these farmers are sued for having seed on their land.
Wow.
Really, the farmers should be suing the companies for contaminating their land. But you know, there's a big debate around it. There's many issues, many issues. But I think about, you know, sovereignty and being able to own our own seeds and have the permission. We shouldn't need the permission, but to save that seed.
I've actually done an episode on seed sovereignty, and I do certainly agree with you there. I wonder, perhaps, Anna, and this is maybe a bit cheeky, we could revisit and have another conversation based purely on the topic of GM.
Oh, yes, I'd love to.
Crops.
I could speak for hours.
Great. Well, let's sort of pencil that in, and then it allows us to move on and get back
to
a bit more to... Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Joining the gaps then, so you basically saw the idea of, was it a gap in the market that you saw, or was it just something that particularly took your interest?
Yeah, well, I knew it was important, and there was that I was in a position where I could have either gone to London and, you know, worked in the industry and not being earning a lot of money. I don't really want to be living in the city anyway, or try and make a livelihood for myself where I was. There is a gap in the market. People don't really, also in terms of education, people aren't really aware of the benefits of vermiculture, especially in an urban environment where people don't have gardens. Worm farming is a perfect solution. You can, you know, you can compost your waste in a small 10 litre bucket in a fifth floor apartment. So to me, it was about how to introduce these concepts to people and help us become more resilient. Because I actually specialise in urban agriculture and urban food security. So for me, it was about raising this profile and building resilience and make their own, so they're not going to purchase your Miracle-Gro anymore, and giving those people more power. So through the market, taking the pound off the big guys.
Yeah.
And producing our own. And for nutrition, you know, we've lost 83% of fertility in our soil since 1850 because of synthetic agriculture, and that makes us sick if we get all our nutrients from the soil. So if we can encourage people to grow food in high dense in material in compost that has a high nutrient density, then we become healthier, obviously.
Yeah. Well, I'm a huge, huge advocate for soil health and for, you know, building our own soils. And I'm also, well, I'm in the process, actually. So on Mondays, I do various series, and I'm in the middle of a permaculture series for my Monday podcast at the moment. And, you know, it, so much of permaculture basically leans on this idea of just looking at what nature does and what nature has done for millennia and using that rather than fighting it, working with it. And that's basically what you're doing, isn't it?
Yes.
That's the whole thing is right there. It's happening under our feet every time we walk outside, and we're going to harness that natural activity and just bend it slightly to our use.
Adapt
and...
it, absolutely.
Does your company do much outside of composting with regards to worms? Do you have much to do with worm health outside of a compost bin?
Not really. Well, we will be. So at the moment, I'm taking the soil food lab. Can't get my words out. Soil food lab certified technician assessment. So we'll be able to take samples and tell people what is in their soil, and another string to the bow for the organization, really. And then looking to provide soil food web. I want to take the consultancy course and provide soil food web consultation as well as vermiculture consultation.
Fantastic. So I'm, you know, as I've already said, I'm a huge advocate for soil health, and the soil food web is so important. And I use no dig gardening for that exact reason. And, you know, is there anything we can do beyond the stuff that everyone knows about to encourage healthy soil that's going to have all of those active plants and animals within it, like worms? Is there anything in particular we should be doing?
Yeah, well, never leave your soil bare. This is the most important thing. So microbes are fed through the sugars that are excreted through roots. Exudates. So it's a self-serving circular system. So the roots excrete all these lovely sugars for the microbes. And obviously, when you don't have roots in your garden, everything's starving. So the roots give off sugars that feed the fungi and bacteria, and then you've got protozoa that eat the fungi and bacteria, and their poo is full of nitrogen and magnesium and all of the good things that we need to produce healthy food. So it's really important to have not to have bare soil. And as little disturbances as possible, as you know, with no dig.
Absolutely. So when you say no bare soil, I mean, there are lots of people who grow on a no dig bed. They might grow one sort of round of crops, if you like. So they might grow you know, what I would call their main crop vegetables, and then they don't grow all through the season, they don't grow in the winter. And it raises a bit of a problem I haven't been able to come up with a good solution for, because if you want to no dig, then the idea of using a green mulch isn't really that appealing. At least I haven't been able to work that into a no dig system. So would just using wood chip mulch, would that help at all, or what is the solution there?
If you've got a no dig bed,
but there's maybe 4 or 5 months every winter when you're not growing anything in it, what's the best solution?
Oh, difficult one. Ideally, to have perennials or have some root systems around the bed, because then you're ensuring there's microbial life throughout out the season.
Yes.
So that is the most ideal. And I guess, you know, and making sure you're adding organic matter standard or organic material, so you can feed the microbial life in the soil.
I always kind of say, I always come back to, you know, whatever else you're doing, if you're practicing some really simple, but if you're practicing well, some really simple, basic, good practices, mm-hmm. it's going to save you from so many pitfalls.
Absolutely.
You know, regularly making your own compost mm-hmm. and using your own compost is going to save you against so many problems that you might
absolutely.
Have.
Absolutely. And increasing your yields, you know, that's so important. Yeah. I mean, through the Soil Food Web, Dr. Elaine Ingham, she's seen an increases of 200%. And also water conservation of up to 50%. So this yeah, is yeah. what, you know, we're going through difficult times at the moment, we all know. Food security. Yep. So getting the most out of our soil is really imperative for everyone right now.
For sure. For sure.
And with, so and getting, sorry, just to go back to worms, with worm manure, you only need a very small amount of worm manure mixed with regular compost to feed your plant. So just a handful will feed your plant yep. throughout the growing season. Worm yeah. manure is full of all 14 nutrients that are essential for healthy plant growth and disease suppression. So strong yeah, plants.
Yeah, strong, healthy mm-hmm. worms, strong plants. So there are lots of different types of worms, yes. aren't there? But not all worms are suitable for vermicomposting.
That's correct.
So which worms do you need, and what's the difference? So and, you know, why are certain worms better for certain things?
So we use surface dwellers, red worms for vermicomposting because they thrive in fresh rotting organic matter. So never ever go to your garden and dig up a deep burrowing garden worm to put in a worm composting system, because they won't be happy and they will die.
Mm-hmm.
So we use Asenia fetida, which is also known like red wiggler or tiger worms. People have called them different names all around the world, but we use tiger worms, and they can double their population every 60 days. And they can yeah. Consume up to half their body weight a day when the conditions are perfect. And they can also reduce the volume by up to 90%. So in terms of waste management strategies, when you have a system that can reduce your volume by 90% is quite useful. And the end product yeah, is very, very concentrated, but will never scorch your yeah. plant. You can never use too
fantastic.
Much vermicompost.
Fantastic. There are of course some plants that don't like a particularly rich yeah. soil, so you know you need to bear yeah. that in mind, don't
absolutely.
You?
Absolutely, absolutely. But we're very behind so in with the UK with this. Yeah,
yeah, I believe yeah. that. I believe that. So the urban worm you mentioned, and please mm-hmm. correct me if I'm wrong, but you mentioned kind of two prongs to mm-hmm. it. You know, you sell the compost yep. itself, and then you also sell the education.
Yes.
on
yes.
the topic. And I'm wondering if we could just talk about the education mm-hmm. first. What does that look
well,
like?
It depends. We provide for schools, communities, workshops, how to make a DIY worm farm, to supporting farmers to set up worm farm systems on their farm, so then they can utilize the worm manure. So whatever age range, we cater for everyone. Education for all.
Okay. Great. And in terms of the compost itself, do you have like a sort of commercial facility which is full of vermicomposting
so
bins?
I have,
in your...
So I have different systems. So I have, although we designed parts to convert wheelie bins into worm farms, and so we sell. Actually, at my worm farm site, I actually have my worms in a polytunnel, and I use windrows, so shallow worm beds. Rather than big as in
okay.
the, I have the space. It's I have a site in the countryside. So there's a farmer that has a few cows, and I use the manure from the cows to feed my worms, because obviously worms can eat any organic matter.
Yeah. Hi guys, I'm just very quickly interrupting the show to say please consider supporting it. If you'd like to consider supporting this one-man operation, there's lots of ways you can do it. One of the easiest of which is just to talk about it, to share it online on your social media pages or with friends. By growing this audience is one of the best ways that we can actually ensure that the show is sustainable. If you'd like to support it more directly, then please consider becoming a patron. You can do so by going to patreon.com
patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. By becoming a patron, you help me to achieve things that I'd love to be able to do in the future, such as buying better equipment to increase the quality, allowing me to pay myself some time to spend on the podcast, again, increasing the quality of it, and also paying for things like transcription and show notes. If you would like to do that, please do consider going to patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. Thank you. Everything you do to support this show is really appreciated.
Yep. So, yeah, we produce about half a ton to a ton, depends on the weather conditions and how fast the worms are eating the waste. But yeah, we sell, worm poo tea bags. for plants, not people.
Perfect.
So you brew, so you make it go further. So we supply the RHS, four RHS gardens. Kew Gardens have just put a purchase order in, and there's several independent retail outlets throughout the country that we supply as well. So you put your worm poo tea bag in your watering can, let it brew for 24 hours, all the microbial life will go into the water. And you've got an organic plant feed. So that's a way to make the product go
further.
That's
fantastic. That I love that idea.
And it's novel. Yeah. And it's niche and novel. It's a great gift. It's a great gift.
I absolutely love that
idea. So I have magic manure. That's what we call it. Magic manure brew bags.
So someone just starting out then, if they're looking to get into vermicomposting, what would you suggest?
On a small scale. Well, if they go to the Urban Worm website, we have a guide section, which is a free downloadable guide to show you how to make one just with two plastic buckets. You can make it on a budget. You don't need a lot of money at all. So you need plastic buckets and a drill, really. I mean, I've seen worm farms made plastic bags being hanging from a tree used as worm farms. So anything goes, really, as long as there's ventilation and drainage. That's the most important thing, and obviously you need some worms. So you can use your if you've got a compost bin, you can take the red worms out of your compost bin to get you started.
Okay.
And also a trick to harvest and to find some worms, some composting worms, is to put a damp piece of cardboard on the ground under a tree, or even I do it in my yard. And after a week or so, you'll find red worms have migrated because they absolutely love corrugated cardboard.
Now,
there's a top
you
tip.
Have really, you've just pressed some buttons for me there that now I need to dive into, because I'm really excited. So I was under the impression, and as I said, I did pre-warn you in our conversation we had a little while ago before today, that, I'm a bit of a mycophile. I love mushrooms. I know a little bit about the mushrooms, but I know very little about worms. So I did warn you that.
Yes.
But the idea, I always assumed that you had to buy your worms for vermicomposting because they were a different species that didn't exist in your garden. This is new to me.
No, not at all. So they obviously in your compost bin, those little red worms, you can use those worms. They are composting worms.
Great.
Epigeic worms. So if they're red, usually that's the trick. If they're red, you can compost
with
them.
Fantastic. And they are out there working right now.
They are out there working
in the process of making I mentioned just before we started recording that I'm in the process of moving 4 ton of compost. I'm extending my vegetable bed, and I've got cardboard down. So am I going to see lots and lots of these red worms finding their way up to the surface and into my compost?
Yes, absolutely. If you make sure that cardboard is damp.
So it's got compost on top of it now.
Because worms need 70% moisture. Yep. They need moisture. So you will find for sure some worms, and they love to get in the ridges of the corrugated cardboard. You'll find them in the ridges. They like to mate in there, so you may find eggs in there as well.
Right. So would a good tip, like you said, be to put your cardboard down, but then after, I don't know, you tell me how long, then actually move that piece
after
of cardboard.
A week, have a look. Yeah, have a look underneath. You'll see some worms gathering underneath. And then we can harvest those and start and set up a little worm farm.
Fantastic. Well, that's great. That's absolutely great.
And they reproduce very quickly because worms are hermaphrodite. Yep. So male and female, but they both lay an egg.
Okay.
So we can change with the ability for worms to reproduce so quickly, and we could produce so much worm compost as a collective, globally, we can make positive change by harnessing the power of the humble earthworm.
Yes.
Who knew?
Who knew indeed? Yeah. There's a quote on your website, actually. I'll let you say it.
Darwin? Darwin, yep. Worms are more powerful than the African elephant and are more important to the economy than the cow. Yeah. So Darwin's last book was really not a catchy title. The Formation of Vegetable Mould Through the Action of Earthworms. I think that's what it was.
Not quite the Origin of Species.
No, definitely not. But it did outsell The Origin of Species, actually.
Wow.
And that was, he died a year after publication, and he was mocked by his peers saying how important the worms were. They all thought he was mad. Yeah. But he made it, he did get there in the end. Luckily he didn't pass out of this world without recognizing how powerful the earthworm is.
Right.
How important.
Well, we've covered everything on my list. Is there anything you feel that we've omitted that you'd like to talk about, or
I suppose how underdeveloped we are in the UK. Throughout the world, particularly in the States, everyone thinks that America are behind. But I'm a Winston Churchill fellow and travelled to the US and Cuba to research worm farming, and it's being harnessed on an industrial scale, but in an institutional setting. So there's 11 or 12 prisons in the States that are managing all of their waste through worm composting. Yeah. I visited one of them when I was there, actually two, but one notable one was the Monroe Correctional Facility in Seattle. And there's a really good TED Talk, if anyone's interested. It's called The Power of Sustainability, that's in from recorded in the prison from Nick Hennesley, I think that was his surname, from inside the worm inside the prison. And I got to go and meet him, and they're also using bokashi and black soldier fly. That's probably another discussion for something else. Around the world, this process is being harnessed, even in airports. There's even an airport in America that's managing their waste through worm farming. So we really need to get on this. So anyone's running a business or catering, or this is something that we can use, and it's cheap.
Well, I was gonna say, listening to what you're saying, the fact that it's being used in sort of closed systems but commercial systems like prisons and airports would mm-hmm, lead me to believe mm-hmm. that those decisions have been made on a financial basis. So
yes,
that tells us something, doesn't it? And
absolutely. And well, especially in the prison that they're supplying the local county council with organic worm manure.
Yeah.
So it's beautiful. It's the inmates are giving something back. The community aren't having chemicals sprayed on them.
Yeah.
And they're reducing their waste.
Yeah, and so
high quality compost.
As a byproduct, reducing the cost of running the prison, one would think.
Absolutely. And giving meaningful activity.
Yeah, yeah. Win-win.
Because for me, worm farming is also a very spiritual process. It's about rebirth and renewal.
Yeah.
So worms can clean toxins. They've cleaned land contaminated with DDTs and PCBs and all sorts. There's lots of research about this. But on a spiritual level, if we understand that it doesn't matter what we did yesterday, and we can move forward and forgive ourselves and forgive each other, the process of the worm really reflects that for me. Rebirth and regeneration and starting anew, clean every day.
Fantastic.
So it's a nice thing for us all to do and bring us closer to our creator, the earth. We get to create our own earth. We're essentially creating God by worm farming. We're making the soil, which is the mother of everything.
Yeah. No, I love it. That's fantastic. Yeah. Okay, Anna, do you want to finally just point people towards where they can find a bit more about you and point them towards your website?
Absolutely. So it's the urbanworm.co.uk. And also, if anyone's interested in reading my report from my Winston Churchill Fellowship, that's the, if you Google Winston Churchill and my surname, Anna de la Vega, there's information on, especially on the prison, there's information on the prison worm composting project on there as well. So there's Facebook, it's the Urban Worm UK on Facebook, and Instagram, we're Wormologist and the Urban Worm. So yeah,
fantastic.
There we are. And if anyone wants to send me an email and to ask any further questions, it's anna@theurbanworm.co.uk, and I'm happy to provide any support and if I can help anyone on their worm farming journey.
That's great. Well, thank you so much, Anna. Thank you for your time today.
Brilliant. And oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
No worries. And we will stay in touch, and maybe we will have another conversation on those GM crops in the future.
Absolutely. I would love to.
Great. Thank you, Anna.
Okay. Lovely. Thank you, Carl.
This episode of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast was brought to you by our patrons. You guys are awesome. If you'd like to support the show, there's lots of ways you can do it. The easiest of which is just to like and review it wherever you get our podcasts. You can also tell somebody about it, whether that's on social media or just face to face with a friend who you think might benefit from it. But however you support our podcast, we really, really appreciate it. If you'd like to become a patron, please consider doing so by going to patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. However you support the podcast, it's listeners like you that make all of this possible. Thank you ever so much for listening, and I'll speak to you really soon.